ॐ सहना भवतु सहना भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः
This is the seventh chapter of Panchadashi, and it's called Tripti Deepa, the Tripti Deepa Prakaram. Tripti means satisfaction, and it's a word used for the state of being for avajnani. Tripti means just the satisfaction, or that satisfied wholeness, all is well with me, right? That the Jivanmukta enjoys. So this is the light, the Tripti Deepa is the light of satisfaction. All of these, some of these, this section, they're all called the light of something or other, and this one is the light of satisfaction. Okay, so what it is a they take a famous verse from the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad and expand this verse in 300 verses. It's even more than 300. Let me just tell you how many verses is this. It's the biggest chapter. It's only 298.
That's all.
298. So, there's 297 verses that expand this one verse. Okay? And so it's a very, very thorough. And there's also a lot of technical points that are brought out here, technical words, that type of thing that I want to spend time on. So this text it's going to be a different, little bit different type of teaching, but it's a beautiful text, so I think you'll like it. Vidyaranya was in the 14th century, and he was one of the Shankaracharyas of the Sringeri Math, I think. And there's a few texts that he has, but this is perhaps the most famous. There's another one he did that we use for the Brihadaranyaka. I mean the Brahma Sutras. It's an commentary on the Brahma Sutras. That's Swamiji uses that quite often. But this is the book that we usually think of when we think of Vidyaranyaka. So let's look at the first verse in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. Atmanam chet vijaniyat. Atmanam chet vijaniyat. Ayam asmiti purushaha. Ayam asmiti purushaha. Kamichan kasya kamaya. Kamichan kasya kamaya. Shariram anusanjwaret. Shariram anusanjwaret. Atmanam chet vijaniyat. Ayam asmi. Iti purushaha kim icchan kasya kamaya shariram anusanjwaret atmanam chet vijaniyat ayam asmi iti purushaha. Purushaha is the nominative here. Chet, if a person, purushaha, if a person, I'm just going to define purusha right now as person. Okay? If we have a long discussion on what purusha actually means, but for now it's just the purusha is the person. So if the purusha, if che purushaha, atmanam vijaniyat, if a person should know vijaniyat, if a person should know the self, atmanam, accusative singular, the verb is potential, atmanam vijaniyat, purusha. If a person should know the self as what? Iti, as, iti, ayam asmi, I am this. Meaning I am this Brahman. If I should know the self as I am this, okay? This referring to the self as Brahman. Atmanam chet vijaniyat, ayam asmi, I am this. Iti purushaha. Then, kim ichan, desiring what? Kasya kamaya. For the sake of whom? For whose sake? Kasya kamaya. Desiring what and for whose sake? Shariram anusanjwarate. that Purusha would take on the problems and the tapas of the body, of the sharira. This physical body that has so many problems, so many ills, is subject to birth and death and old age, goes through all the shadbhava-vikaras, you know. It's born, right? It grows, it matures, it goes through puberty, it gets old, gets ill, and dies. Part of it's okay. Part of it's problematic. So all of the ills, pains, and problems that the body goes through, all of the limitations, it's not just physical illness, but all of the limitations that you have as a jiva, an embodied jiva, right? For a person, if a person should know the self as, I mean, has self-knowledge, should know the Atma, the Paramatma, as I am this, right? Now, that's very significant. Ayamasmi. And again, there'll be many verses on this. If one should know this self as I am this, that means direct, immediate knowledge, right? If I say, for instance, if I say, Aham Brahmasmi, I am Brahman. That's different than saying the Shastra tells me that I am Brahman. Right? That's indirect knowledge. But if I am able to say, I am this, then that means I have direct, immediate knowledge. And there's actually been a shift in my self-recognition, a shift in my identity. Before, my identity, the Ahankara, was identified with this body. I am this body. I am this mind. I am the jiva, who is then seeking happiness in the world. I'm a limited entity seeking happiness in the world. But what if I recognize Ayamasmi? I am this Satchit Ananda, that my being is limitless, that my being is Brahman. Then, for the sake of whom, desiring what, and for whose sake would I take on all of the, would I identify with all of the ills of the body? Would I take on all of the problems of the body? That's the verse that needs to be analyzed. I know where I said. Okay. Never mind. I was looking for the Bhasha. This verse, Atmanam Chet Vijaniyat, this verse is from the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, and it has a very nice Bhasha on it, and I was thinking that Bhasha was here. So let me just tell you what that Bhasha says, and then we'll let the 200 and something verses explain it. But I'll just say, if I know myself as Brahman, which means by knowing that, this now, so I'm now relating to that Bhasha, by knowing that I know myself as the self of all beings, okay, first of all, because Brahman is infinite. And so the Atma, this Atma that I am, is the self of all beings. And then also I know myself as the self of the whole Maya Upadi, as the very as the clay of the pot. I am the self, which is the truth of all of the objects that I experience. So this is the vision. The vision of Vedanta is really I am the whole. That I am the self of all beings and that this manifest creation is nothing but me. Okay? So that's my vision. So if I can say I am this, what I'm saying is that I am all of this. This is one without a second. I am the truth of all of this. That's the vision. Now, if I have that vision to the point of direct immediate knowledge that I can say Ayamasmi, I am this. I am this Brahman, which is the whole. Then, kim ichen, desiring what? What am I going to desire, if that's my vision? Because I already am that. I would have to desire, if I'm going to have a desire for something, there has to be a pala, or something which is other than myself, to desire. You see that? And if I am everything, then where's that other thing to have a desire for it? So kim ichen, desiring what? Would I take on the limitations of this body or the ills, to identify with the ills of this body? Then, kasya kamaya. Also, for the sake of whom? For the kama, you know, for the prayojana, for whose sake? Kasya kamaya, and for whose sake would I do this? Is there another self to do it for? See what I mean? Am I doing it for the sake of someone? I could say I'm not doing it for myself. I'm doing it for the sake of someone. I'm taking on the ills of this body, the identification with this body. So then there would have to be someone else. Right? So here, neither is there something else, some other pala that is other than myself, nor is there someone else, because then there would have to be two of us in order for me to do it for the sake of another. And in this bhasha, I might as well get it. It's just a very nice bhasha, so let me read this little part of it. It's for the anatma darshinaha. The anatma darshinaha is the one who is not a seer of the self. Darshinaha means one who is seeing the atma. Atma darshinaha would be for one who is seeing the self, would be atma darshinaha. Anatma darshinaha, for one who's not seeing the self. So for one who, in other words, for one who doesn't know oneself, tad vyatirikta vastu antara ipsoho means what? For a person who is not seeing oneself, it's for that person that there can be the ipsa. Ipsa means the desire. There can be the ipsa, the desire for another thing which is different from that. Right? For someone who doesn't see the self, as I am the self and all beings and everything is me. For a person who doesn't see that, for that person, there can be a desire for another thing, which is different from that. Mm-hmm. Right? It's obvious. Otherwise, I can't have a desire for myself because I already have myself. Right? So then he says, like what? Mama idam syat. I have to have that. Mm-hmm. For me, this should be. I should have this. Right? That's one form. But it doesn't stop there. Putrasya idam. My son should have this. Okay? My son should have this. Baryaya idam. My wife should have this. Right? It doesn't stop. It just doesn't stop with you. You know, my son should have it. My wife should have it. My husband should have it. My children should have it. My grandchildren must have this. Okay? Iti evam. Ihamanaha, desiring things in this manner again and again, janma marana prabandha ruddha. The person goes on repeatedly circling birth after death, birth, death, birth, death, birth, death, consecutively. Birth is first, born, then dies, born, dies, born, dies. is caught in this cycle of birth and death. And when that is the case, then that person will suffer all of the ailments of the body. Right? Because I have to have this, and I need to have this, and I need to have this. Already I'm a jiva, right? And so I'll take on the ailments of the body when that's the situation. But Sarvatma Darshina has too, Ted Asambhavaha. He says, but for one who sees that the self is everything, that I am the whole, sarva means everything. So sarva atma darshinaha. For the one who sees that the atma is sarva, is everything, tad asambhavaha. For him, for that person, that is impossible. It's impossible. What if I see that you are me and you are me and my husband is me and my child is me and all of the objects are me? What if I truly see myself as the whole? It makes for a whole different state of reality. So this, it's a verse that deals with this vision on a very complete, absolute level. So let's look at the verse again. Atmanam chet vijaniyat ayamasmi iti purushaha. If a person should know that I am the Atma, as ayamasmi, I am this, desiring what and for the sake of whom would that person take on the ills of this limited body? Why would the person continue on in samsara? Why would the person take another body? That's what it amounts to. For what? What would be the purpose? What would be the purpose? What would be the pravritti? In your mind, for a person who sees I am the whole, what is the pravritti? What would be the drive? Say if that jiva, once the body is dropped, for instance, once the body's dropped, what would cause the jivatvam to remain, the sense of limitation to remain? What would create the dvaita, duality? I want this. I need this. Rather than I am this. Do you see the difference? The difference between a buddhi which sees I am this, and how can one who sees I am this say I need this? When the this is the same as the one that I am. So I am this and I need this don't go together. That's why he says it's asambhavaha. Asambhavaha means it's not a possibility. You can't arrive at that state. If you're at this one, if that knowledge is there, you can't become the other thing. Okay? So now, in this next verse, so that's the verse. It's a very complete. It's talking about a jivan mukta who really has this vision. So let's look at verse 2. Asyashrute rabhiprayaha, asyashrute rabhiprayaha, samyak atra vicharayate, samyak atra vicharayate, jivan muktasya yatriptihi, jivan muktasya yatriptihi, satena vishadayate, satena vishadayate. He says, asyaha shrutehe, genitives, of this shruti, asyaha, this shrute, of this shruti, of this shloka that we've just said, this scriptural statement, asya, for this shruti, the meaning, abhiprayaha, the meaning of this shruti, asyaha shrutehe abhiprayaha, samyak atra vicharyate, atra here, samyak vicharyate is clearly analyzed. The meaning of this shruti is here going to be clearly, thoroughly analyzed. Vicharyate. Jivan muktasya ya triptihi. Sa tena vishadayate. By that, the tripti, the satisfaction of the jivanmukta, jivanmuktasya ya triptihi, which tripti, which satisfaction of the jivanmukta, nominative, sa triptihi, which satisfaction, jivanmuktasya, of the one who's living liberated, jivanmuktasya ya triptihi, sa, that, vishadayate, is made clear by that. Okay. So what he says is, here the meaning of this shruti is going to be thoroughly analyzed by the satisfaction of the jivanmukta will be made very clear by this. By what? By the analysis of the meaning of this verse. Everybody see? It's just a statement telling exactly what we're going to do. We're going to thoroughly analyze this one verse, and by thoroughly analyzing it, what it means to be a jivanmukta and what the satisfaction of that jivanmukta is will be made very, very clear through this analysis. So that's now what we're going to be doing. Everybody see? Next verse. Maya bhasena jivesho.
Maya bhasena jivesho.
Karoti ti shrutatvataha.
Karoti ti shrutatvataha.
Kalpita veva jivesho.
Kalpita veva jivesho.
Tapyam sarvam prakalpitam.
Tapyam sarvam prakalpitam.
Sandhi here. Maya, nominative. Maya, next word. Abhasena. Jiva isha, compound. Jiva isha. Karoti iti shrutatvataha. Kalpitau eva. Jiva ishao tabhyam sarvam prakalpitam. Okay. This is interesting. We are going to begin working on the definition of the Purusha. Purusha means the person. But he starts this definition of the Purusha with an introduction called an Upodgata. An Upodgata means something that's going to lead into this definition. It's called an Upodgata. And so he starts it by defining the nature of the entire creation. That's how we're going to get to this understanding of the Purusha. So he says, Maya, by its reflection, by reflection, Jiva, the Jiva and Ishwara, Karoti, creates. Jiva Shao is a dwindle compound. So Maya, nominative singular, Abhas Maya, by reflection, the Jiva and Ishwara, accusative dual, Karoti. Maya, through reflection, creates the Jiva and Ishwara. Iti, Shrutatvataha. From this Shruti statement, right? From being shrutatvataha means from being in the shruti, from being heard in the shruti. From what being heard in the shruti? That Maya creates the jiva and ishwara through reflection. Knowing that through the shruti, then what? Kalpitau eva jivesha. The jiva and ishwara are projected, are created. That's what it means. Through the shruti we know that the jiva and ishwara are made by Maya. Maya makes the jiva and ishwara through the abhasya. What does that make us know? That the jiva and ishwara themselves, God and individual, jiva and ishwara, they are created. Kalpitau eva. They are created alone. Then what? Pabhyam sarvam prakalpitam. And by them, everything else is created. By these two, everything else is created. Okay, so let's take a look at what some of these words mean. Atra maya shabdena. By the word maya, what does maya mean? Here's the actual definition. Chit, since a lot of these words you know. Chirananda maya brahma. Brahman What is that? It says, what is Maya? Okay. Brahman, which is Chit Ananda Maya, which is Sat Chit Ananda. Chit is consciousness. Ananda means limitless. Limitless wholeness, consciousness which is limitless. Chit Ananda Maya. Maya just means what Brahman is made of. Brahman is made of Chit Ananda. That's what it is. Right? Brahman is Chit, Brahman is Ananda. It's not Maya, it's Maya, not Maya. So Chit Ananda Maya Brahma, Pratibimba Samanvita, together with the reflection, okay, together with the reflection of Brahman, which is Chit Ananda, Chit Ananda Maya Brahma, Pratibimba Samanvita, Sattva Rajatamo Gunatmika, Jagat Upadana Bhuta, Prakriti Uchate. Okay, let me just tell you in English, Richard. Maya is often, in the Bhagavad Gita and other places, known as Prakriti. The Sankhyas also call Maya as Prakriti. So Prakriti is often a word or used synonymously with Maya, and it means that material that is the very, that projects as this whole creation. So he says here, this which is called Prakriti is the Jagat Upadana Bhuta. As the nature of the material cause of the creation, the upadana, the material cause for all of the nama rupas of the creation. It itself is made of sattva, rajas, and tamas. So that's the three gunas. If we say, what is Maya? You know, we can say, well, it's the creative power of Ishvara. But what is it really? It's what projects this whole creation of nama rupa, the whole jagat, space, air, fire, water, earth, time and space, all of this is a projection of Maya. We say that this projection of Maya is something, the projection of Maya, we give an order to the whole. I'm not going to go through the whole order now, but the Maya itself projects in a certain pattern, a certain order. We say that it itself is made of three gunas, sattva, rajas, and tamas. So the sattva is the intelligent principle. Rajas is the active principle. Tamas is the inert principle. So if the whole Maya projects as this universe, these three principles then become pervasive to the universe. It's going to be important to understand this in the next verse. So here he says there's a definition for Maya as the creative principle. It goes like this. That Maya itself creates the jiva and Ishvara, the Maya which is made of sattva, rajas, and tamas. This Maya creates the jiva and Ishvara through reflection, abhasa. Swamiji's actually stopped using this word. Vidyaranya uses it all the way through the Panchadashi. So I want to explain this word, abhasa. Abhasa means, if we just look it up in the dictionary, it means reflection, right? The abhasa. The word pratibimba also means reflection. So there's a word which Vidyaranya will use a lot called chidabhasa, the reflection of consciousness. Okay? Chid means consciousness. Chidabhasa, the reflection of consciousness. Now, the jiva is a conscious being. Ishvara, as the infinite, as the Lord, is a conscious being. Right? The jiva is different from Ishvara. Right? The jiva is limited. Ishvara is limitless. Both are conscious beings. Right? Where does the consciousness come from? Because now look. If Maya projects this creation, space, air, fire, water, earth, time, space, and all of the elementals, if like this, if we think of, if I project a dream or an imagination, I project this material that we call Maya, it projects as this universe, space, air, fire, water, earth, and that's always going to be there, and then some mixture, making all of the elementals, making all of the jivas, all of the animals, all the plants, all of the different objects in the universe. Right? Now, those objects are, of their own accord, inert. They're not sentient. Right? If Maya is just the name and form,
What allows for the sentiency? What allows for the consciousness that Maya enjoys? Because we don't say that Maya has consciousness of its own accord. So if we bring in Maya that is responsible for all of the projection of the creation, where does the consciousness come from? Okay, so now, look at this. In this room, right, this isn't conscious. This chair doesn't seem to be conscious. The lamp isn't conscious. Right? The rug isn't conscious. But you're conscious, and you're conscious, and you're conscious. Right? Why are you conscious and the lamp is not conscious? See what I mean? There's a problem there. If all of this is conscious, right? All of this is consciousness, then why isn't everything conscious? Because, so what's said here, is we look at Maya as made composed of three strands, sattva, rajas, and tamas. Okay? It's only the sattva aspect that allows for the manifestation of consciousness. The rajas aspect is not conscious. It's just energy. Rajas is energy. It's motion. Tamas is just name and form. Sattva, the sattva principle, is intelligence. And so, if we look at the manifestation of Maya as sattva, rajas, and tamas, we say that the sattva aspect reflects consciousness. So what would be considered sattva in an individual made of sattva? The mind and the sense organs are sattva. They reflect consciousness. What about what would be rajas in the individual? It would be all of the vital force and all of the organs of action, all of the energy, all of the peristaltic movement, digestion, circulatory system, everything that involves energy and action is the rajas aspect of Maya. What would be the tamas aspect? Would be the name and form, the physical form is the tamas aspect, what gives form. But only the sattva allows for the reflection of consciousness. Okay, so now, let's look at how this works. If you have an imagination, and you enter that imagination, I ask you to imagine a meadow, which I do so many times. I'm having you imagine a meadow. And then I have you walk with some friends through the meadow. Okay. Now there's going to be two realities there. If you think like this, your imagination is made of Maya. And that Maya consists of sattva, rajas, and tamas. Okay. And it's not sattva, sattva, rajas, and tamas, period. That's what it is. And it projects as the five elements. If that entire projection comes from you, and you are only identified with a sattva aspect of that projection, that's Ishvara. The only point of identification is the sattva. That means you're not identified with any particular name and form. You're not identified with any rajas, any activity. You're only identified with the sattva. Means that you're being, you simply reflect, right, consciousness. You are the one, you are the whole reflection of consciousness. Now think like this. When you have a dream, it's your dream. If you're not identified with a character in the dream, you're not identified with any character in the dream, then you're not identified with the trees, you're not identified with the space, you're not identified with the space, air, fire, water, earth, no elements, no elementals, no living beings, and yet the whole dream is known to you. Right? You're not identified with anything in the dream. The whole dream is known to you. Then what is your a point of identification? Is only the sattva. Because the whole thing is known to you. Right? And so that sattva reflecting consciousness, right, gives the experience of the whole. Now, say you are, here's your dream. Now you're in the dream, walking around in the dream. Now there's a body, which is tamas. There's sense organs, sattva, buddhi, mind, sattva, but organs of action, rajas. So now your sattva allows you to have the knowership because sattva reflects. That's the abhasa. The sattva, you can say reflects or enjoys. It enjoys the consciousness. But that sattva is identified with tamas and rajas. And so we say it's contaminated. It's not pure sattva. It's sattva which is identified with rajas and tamas. That's what makes the jiva. So when you have a dream, it's very easy, I think, for you to understand in an imagination the difference between Ishvara and the jiva. Because Ishvara, there is no, you are Ishvara in the dream. Whenever you're not identified, well, actually, in both ways, it's easy to see. If you're not identified with the jiva in the dream and looking out through the sense organs of the jiva and thinking through the mind of the jiva, that's contaminated sattva. But if you are not identified with a creature in the dream, or even if you see yourself in the dream, but there's no point of identification, then you just simply are the whole. That's your experience. That's pure sattva. So here he says, that's what they say, Maya creates both the jiva and Ishvara through the reflection. Through the reflection. The reflection takes place through the sattva. Otherwise, there is no jiva, there is no Ishvara, there's just Brahman, that's all. There's Brahman plus this Maya, which is manifest as the Maya Upadhi. Now, say if you were to say like this, if we use a clay pot, we say, the pot is just nothing but clay, there's only clay there. You know, but we're not dealing with any reflection. There's no sattva there. He says just that there's this pot, but really all that's there is clay. So we could say, there's just this universe, there's this Maya, right? But all that's here is Brahman. There's only Brahman here. But you know what? There'd be nobody to be talking. There'd just be Brahman. There's no abhasa. There's no reflection in terms of that projected creation, that Maya Upadhi, that allows for the Maya Upadhi to itself be sentient. Right? Just like in the dream is there, the whole dream is known, that's Ishvara. The whole thing is one, is me. When you have a dream, that's your Upadhi. Look like this. You have a dream. Or waking dream, say, a good, solid imagination. And you're not in it as a jiva. It's just the imagination of a beautiful scene, for instance. You're not in it as a jiva. Then that is you. That is you. Right? It comes from you, is sustained by you, it goes back into you. That's you're in like an infinite mind. Right? There's no part of it that's not you. You're the omniscient, omnipotent, all-pervasive, the very being, the very substance of that imagination. So now think, if you didn't have, we're experiencing this creation through this upadhi, through this physical body. And so from the standpoint of the physical body, just like if you had a beautiful imagination, from your standpoint, you are the self of that imagination. But if you imagine beings in the imagination, and they're looking out, then their experience is limited. Do you see that? The jiva's experience is limited because it's being seen through tamas and rajas. The sense organs themselves are limited by their association with tamas and rajas, with name and form and the active principle and all of that. So the experience of that sattva is a limited experience, even though it's reflecting and enjoying the same consciousness. Then if you think like this, those jivas that are enjoying limited experience they can't be the whole, they can't experience the whole, but still they have no material, no part of them is away or other than the whole. If you imagine the meadow, all of the parts in the meadow every single part of that of the imagination in the meadow is not in any way separate or other than the meadow. The sky is not separate from the imagination. The trees are not. The grass is not. The clouds are not. The sun is not. All are just part of one intricate order. And all of the beings in that order are part of that order also. All of them, the beings along with the order, are made of exactly the same material. Right? They're made of the same projection, not some other material. And that material is what we call Maya. Now, of that material that we call Maya, what causes that Maya to be called Ishvara, the Lord? Or what causes that material to be called the Jiva? We don't call the space the Jiva. We don't call this lamp a Jiva. We call individuals that reflect consciousness a Jiva. And we call from the Shruti, that's why it says, Shrutatvataha. Shrutatvataha. Means from because of being told by the Shruti, we say that this whole creation itself is abhasa, is a reflection. This whole creation itself, why do we say is a reflection? Reflection, the word itself has some problems. We also, the word has some problems because you can think, if I think that this mind that I'm enjoying is a reflection of consciousness, the problem with the word is that you can think that my experience of consciousness is the experience of a reflection, and consciousness is different. That's why Swamiji doesn't like to use the word. But why the word is useful, if we can get over that limitation, you know, why the word is useful is because it makes you understand the sentiency that's experienced from the standpoint of the upadhi. Now, the Shruti says this entire Maya upadhi means the whole time-space creation, all that is in duality, the whole thing, reflects intelligence, reflects consciousness. That makes the whole creation in an infinite mind. Why would we say the Maya upadhi is like an infinite mind? Why do we say that? Because you reflect, your mind reflects consciousness, so that you can say, the mind can make that mistake and say, I am the conscious being. You can say, your mind manifests consciousness, if you want to say it like that. Your mind enjoys consciousness. Right? Or your mind reflects consciousness. However you want to say that, you know, if you can say that your mind reflects consciousness, the mind by nature enjoys awareness, whatever the thought is that the mind has, whatever the emotion is, it enjoys awareness. Then what if we say, like that, like how your mind, the whole mind stuff enjoys awareness, imagine this infinite creation as enjoying awareness like that. So now, let me go back and say, okay, if your mind, if I ask you to have an imagination of the universe, that entire imagination, every part of it, enjoys awareness. Right? Because that's the mind stuff. That's the sattva. And everything in that creation will exist in that awareness and enjoy that awareness. Right? But as Ishvara, it reflects awareness. Right? As Ishvara, it reflects awareness. That means it has an abhimana. And abhimana means a sense of self. The Maya upadhi has a sense of self, of me, infinite me. Just like your mind, if I ask you to imagine a creation, that entire creation has a sense of self, a sense of me. Because that imagination comes from me, is sustained by me, is totally known by me, resolves into me. So that's why we use abhasa. So here the infinite creation manifests from me, from the Atma, which is Brahman, is sustained by me, resolves into me, because of the pervasive sattva, that whole creation reflects me, therefore it has an abhimana. That's why we call it Ishvara, the Lord, because this creation, the infinite creation, is known. Right? And so that's why here he says, Maya, through the abhasa, through the reflection, creates the jiva and Ishvara, through reflection. That's where this chit-abhasa comes in, the reflection of consciousness. The chit-abhasa, the reflection of consciousness, is something your mind enjoys, your sense organs enjoy it. You have to be careful, because when they say reflection of consciousness, there is no reflection different from the consciousness itself. Let me give you an example of the problem. If I hold up a mirror to the sun, right? The sun is shining in the mirror and there's a reflection of the sun in the mirror. That's how we think of reflection. But the sun is up there and the reflection is here. And this little sun that's in the mirror is different than that sun there. So now, if you think of yourself, this abhasa, as a reflection of consciousness, are you the little sun in the mirror? Different from that consciousness up there. That's why Swamiji won't use the word. Because the consciousness that you experience as yourself when you say me is the sun. There is no little reflection. Right? But why the word is used is from the standpoint of the Maya. There's only certain things from the standpoint now of the Maya Upadhi that will allow the mistake to be made. In other words, I can say, this body allows for me to say, I am this body. I can mistake the consciousness to belong to this body. And so the reflection, this body as though reflects the Atma. It takes the Atma to itself. My mind, I can say, I am my mind, I am my thoughts. It takes the Atma to itself. That's all we mean by the reflection. But there is no separate Atma reflecting in the mind, like the Atma and the reflection. See what I'm saying? So this me that is you, when you say I am, that self that we're talking about is Brahman. So you have to bring the sun down and stick it in the mirror. Bring the real sun down and stick it in the mirror. And then this mirror is able to manifest the sunlight. You know, it's able to as though manifest the sunlight. But if maybe if you brought the sun down and stuck it in the rock wouldn't manifest the sunlight like the mirror would. Get the idea? But there's no separate, reflection that's taking place there. So the me that you experience as me is Brahman. There is no other. But in this upadhi, in this Maya upadhi, which is the sattva, rajas, and tamas, not all of this Maya upadhi reflects the self in the same way. The chair doesn't. Chair doesn't have any sattva, right? For itself. It doesn't have a sukshma sharira. It doesn't have a subtle body. This doesn't have a subtle body, right? But from Ishvara's standpoint, all of these objects and jivas, the jivas have subtle bodies, the objects don't, but all of them exist in one mind. Just like in your imagination. If you have an imagination, put in the imagination animals, rocks, and people. Right? Animals, rocks, people, a rug, a house, a table. Some of those objects reflect consciousness, some don't. In some of the objects, there's the manifestation of consciousness, and in some there aren't. In your imagination, a table's not going to say, I am a table. You know? But the individual will say, I am a person. I am a conscious being. The table's not going to say, I'm a conscious being. But the table and the person and the animal and the sky and the sun, all of those are in your imagination. And all are known to you. Because the sattva is pervasive, but the objects may or may not have a sukshma sharira, a subtle body. Okay? And so here, so what he says is, the maya creates, from the Shruti tells us, the maya itself creates the jiva and Ishvara through that reflection. This means what? That the Lord and the jiva, Ishvara and the jiva, they're creations, they're created. They're not Brahman in the sense that they're Brahman in the sense that everything is Brahman. But the jiva is a manifestation of Maya. Right? Without Maya, there's no jiva. Without Maya, there's only Brahman. Without Maya, there's no Ishvara. There's only Brahman. Right? So Ishvara requires Maya. And then reflected, Brahman reflected in Maya, that's the Lord. Right? The conscious being, the whole. The jiva reflected, right? The Atma reflected in the jiva upadi, that's what makes the jiva. But without Maya, there is no jiva, there is no Ishvara. The jiva and Ishvara are creations. Without the Maya upadi, the self of the jiva is there, the self of Ishvara is there, that's Brahman. That's your being. Your being isn't who you are, isn't dependent upon the Maya upadi. Who you are isn't dependent on Ishvara. It's not dependent on a jiva. Yeah? The self is the one from whom all of this comes. So you're totally independent of all of that. But all of this creation is not independent of you. When the Maya Upadi comes, because of the reflection, we have jiva and Ishvara. Then he says, and it's by both of these, the jiva and Ishvara, that everything else is created. Like you can build a house. Plants can grow. The world goes on shaping and changing. Right? So once the jiva and Ishvara are there, then everything that is taking place within the creation is taking place within the jiva, by the jiva, done by the jiva, or within Ishvara, the whole movement of Ishvara. Right? But once the jiva and Ishvara is there, then that accounts for all that is. Okay? So all activity takes place within Ishvara, and all of the things that are being done by the jiva, and all of the creations, all of the things, all of the movement in the creation, all of that is Ishvara. And then all of the things that are made by the jiva. They'll get into detail now about what all of those things are, all of the projections of the jiva. Yeah. What does Ishvara do and what does the jiva do? We'll see. We'll get into that. But for now, let's just stick to these things. I'm just telling you just one other short thing. In Panchadashi, in the first chapter, in the first few verses actually, he gives a definition that now he's just referring back to. He gives a definition of the jiva and Ishvara. And what he says is, Maya itself is divided into Maya and Avidya. When we look at Ishvara, we just look at the Brahman plus the Maya Upadi. And that's when we say there is no Ajnana, there is no ignorance for Ishvara. There's just simply the projection through Maya of this infinite creation. Okay. And so there we say the Ishvara is only identified with the Sattva-guna. So he says that here. He says, Sacha Sattva-gunasya Shuddhi Avishuddhibhyam Dvidha Vidyamana Kramena Mayacha Avidyacha Pavati. Here's this. These terms, Maya and Avidya, have to do only with the Sattva Guna. Maya, remember, is Sattva, Rajas, and Tamas. It's the Sattva Guna that reflects consciousness. We call the Maya Upadhi of Ishvara, Maya, the Ishvara is only identified with the Sattva Guna, whereas the Jiva is Vishuddha Sattva, means the Sattva is impure, because it's identified with the Rajas and Tamas. When that's the case, when there is the identification with the rajas and tamas, we call that maya avidya. From the standpoint of the jiva, it becomes avidya. From the standpoint of Brahman, it's just maya. There's no avidya there. But because the sattva is limited by the rajas and tamas, by the body and mind and sense organs, its experience in the creation is limited. And so the very maya that is the limitless upadhi for Ishvara brings about, creates the avidya for the jiva. Do you see how that is? Like if you are not identified with the total, you're only identified with a part. You're experiencing your maya, or all of the nama rupa, the name and form and everything about you is just this maya upadhi. That's all it is. Right? It's part and parcel of the maya upadhi. But the mind that you enjoy with your sense organs is limited because associated with this limited physical body, limited mind. And so the experiences there of that maya are going to be limited. Right? So your sense organs are limited, your mind is limited. And so you're on the other side of maya. It's one way of looking at it. You're on the other side of maya, where the sattva is limited. We call that avidya. So what is maya to Ishvara is avidya to the jiva. And so that's what he's saying here. He says that maya and avidya, in this order, maya is divided twofold into maya and avidya. By the shuddhi and avishuddhi of the sattva guna. That's all it is. That's what makes for the limitation. That's why when this upadhi is removed, for the jivan mukta, as we'll see, when the upadhi is no more, then there's nothing more. That upadhi is what itself is experiencing limitation. The upadhi itself experiences limitation. There's still sattva there, but the sattva is associated with the limitations of the body, mind, sense organs. And so it experiences limitation. When that upadhi is not there, that experience of limitation is not there. So then what is there? There's just the maya upadhi with the sattva guna, which is Ishvara. So, all right, let's stop. Okay.
Purnamadakshate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti 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 Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.